If you're one of the some 2 million people who hope to see Pope Francis this fall in Philadelphia, better start planning now. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter today announced the city's plans for how to move all those visitors around. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports there'll be unprecedented travel restrictions during that last weekend of September.
Mayor Michael Nutter says the papal visit is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Philadelphia.
This event, more than likely, is bigger and more impactful than anything you've probably seen.
Driving a car to the event is definitely out, says the mayor. Mass transit will be the only way to the papal mass. SEPTA General Manager Joe Casey says regional rail lines will radically change the weekend schedule to deal with the crowds.
Only 31 of our system-wide 280 rail stations will be open for service. This will allow us to speed up service, recycle the trains to increase our system capacity.
Casey says weekly and monthly regional rail passes will not be accepted that weekend.
The special passes will be sold in limited quantities and specific to the rail stations.
SEPTA passes and tokens will be honored for the subways, trolleys, and bus lines. But the Market Frankfurt L will have only a few stops open on each end. The Frankfurt Transportation Center and Girard Avenue from the northeast, and 69th Street and 52nd Street stations from the west. And if you think Amtrak might be a better option, Rhina Cutler of the Passenger Rail Line says it will be reserved tickets only.
This is both a security and an operational issue and will help us ensure a better overall experience for our passengers.
After all that, once you arrive in Center City, be ready to walk. Mayor Nutter says it could be a 2-mile hike for some to get to the event sites. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
A new report finds an alarming number of foster children in Pennsylvania are taking psychotropic drugs, sometimes for common childhood behavior. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Katie Heiler reports.
Pennsylvania children in foster care are 3 to 4 times more likely than kids outside the system to be prescribed psychotropic medications for behavioral issues. A report issued by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in collaboration with the State Department of Human Services studied kids enrolled in Medicaid, both in and out of foster care. It found many children were prescribed more than one drug, and very few regularly saw a behavioral health provider. Kathleen Noonan, co-director of Policy Lab at CHOP, says that while there are few alternatives to drugs available to kids, prescribers may have over-relied on them.
There was limited sort of behavioral health services available for them. And that's not to say that there weren't services that you could refer them to, but that the services maybe weren't actually meeting their needs. And so it was our theory that actually the meds were sort of the easiest thing.
In some cases, there was little evidence that psychotropic drugs were the best treatment for a child. According to Kathy Utz, Deputy Secretary with the Department of Human Services, many kids are being medicated for common childhood behaviors.
We take children who are in foster care and put them into a home where they don't know the person with whom they're living. We almost expect them that they will be perfect, that they wouldn't have any behavioral issues.
Utz says Human Services is monitoring medication more thoroughly and offering education and training to caseworkers and families. For WHYY News, I'm Katie Heiler.
The fight to save the oldest Polish Catholic Church in Philadelphia is heating up. On one side, the Archdiocese. It merged the old church with a nearby parish 2 years ago and has been trying to sell the empty building ever since. On the other side are dozens of former parishioners of St. Laurentius in Fishtown and other community activists who are gaining momentum to save it. The fate of the empty church is expected to be decided next month by the city's Historical Commission. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports.
Kate Gaber is sitting in a yellow school bus with 30 other people just like her. Lifelong Fishtown residents who've spent their whole lives going to St. Laurentius.
This is heartbreaking because of the community. It's not just a church, it's a community and friends and, you know, families that grew up together and everything, and that we don't have that anymore.
Gaber and the whole bus crew are wearing white T-shirts with Save St. Laurentius written in bold red letters. The bus is on its way to a public hearing over the future of the church. For as long as she can remember, the church has been a symbol of her identity, a marker of her place in Philadelphia.
To give anybody directions to go anywhere, oh, well, you'll come upon this church and it has these big green, steeples, and you'll know that you're close to where you're going to go.
But ever since the Archdiocese of Philadelphia combined St. Laurentius with Holy Name, an Irish church just down the street, the question has been asked, what to do with the empty church from the 1880s? An engineering firm presented the Archdiocese with basically two options: invest millions into the church to preserve it, or demolish it and sell the land. Church officials have been pursuing the second option. Archdiocese spokesman Ken Gavin says the parish is cash-strapped.
And since the parish is responsible for its finances, it has to take a fiscally prudent approach so that there is a Catholic church present in Fishtown.
From a purely financial perspective, it makes sense. The reports say there are long vertical cracks in the facade, one of the towers is leaning 6 inches off center, and there's damage from water infiltration. Just maintaining the building, the Archdiocese says, cost $40,000 a year. It's now surrounded by scaffolding. But supporters of saving it see more than a cost-benefit analysis.
I am Aaron Wunsch, and I teach architectural history in Penn's graduate program in historic preservation.
Wunsch says the church is in the Gothic Revival style. The soaring copper spires, green from decades in the elements, is signature of the late 19th century. But the House of Worship also represents something about the community.
This is a building which is central to the history of the Polish community in the city of Philadelphia. This building was really built as a kind of a showpiece or a bulwark, announcing that they had come, and not only come, but done well enough to build something like this.
Aside from the beauty of the church itself, they always had a beautiful choir, a phenomenal organist.
Kathy Plunka is another longtime resident. Her memories of Fishtown over the years are deeply connected to the area's Polish roots.
The funeral home, Oshekis, was right there. That was Polish. Bill's Deli, him and his wife were both from Poland. The accent was there, very thick.
She says you can hear gentrification in Fishtown by noticing how the sounds on the street have changed.
A lot of the voices, the strong voices, your factory workers, your union workers, that have, that are older and they've either gone into retirement homes or moved away, passed away. The neighborhood's a lot of professionals, so when they speak, it's more quiet. It's not as boisterous.
Kate Gaber has another name for the newcomers.
We call them our dog walkers. A lot of them have dogs. They don't have kids, right?
But one afternoon, when she was selling St. Laurentius shirts outside of the shuttered church, some of the dog walkers stopped by.
They stopped and they bought the shirts. And they said to us, anything to support, because it's a beautiful place. And if they ripped it down, what are they going to build there?
And this leads to something that's striking about the movement to stop the demolition. The people behind the church's social media activism, the people leading the community meetings, and the spokespeople talking to the press are not residents with old Polish roots. They're newcomers to the neighborhood, young professionals. Take William Ellerby. He and his wife recently purchased a home near the church. He wasn't walking a dog, but he was pushing a stroller.
You've got this immigrant community, and they built this beautiful church. The effort and the money that went into that, is such a testament to what that community was and what it thought of itself. And it still is such a beautiful building. You can't rebuild 133-year-old buildings.
Retired Temple University anthropologist Judith Good, who studies how the city's immigrant neighborhoods have changed, says it's not surprising that the newcomers are joining the fight.
I had someone say to me once, I walk out in the neighborhood and I hear so many languages, it makes my adrenaline flow. And so that's what they're trying to consume. They're trying to consume this valuable essence of diversity. You've got two allies who are involved in this process, and they have mutual interests but not identical interests.
When the bus full of church supporters from Fishtown arrived to City Hall and pushed their way into the tiny room where the committee of the Historical Commission was meeting, passions flared on both sides with jeers, cheers, and interruptions.
1600 to 06 and 1608 to 10 be designated historic.
In the end, the committee recommended that St. Laurentius be protected from demolition. In July, the full historical commission will have the final say about whether to save or demolish the church. But as Professor Good notes, activists in this neighborhood have a poor track record over the decades of trying to save old churches.
This has been happening in North Philadelphia. This is like one of the last. And there have been uprisings. So there have been demonstrations to no avail.
Old residents and new ones, though, are hopeful that they can beat the odds. They say they've raised $500,000 in pledges they can use to start fixing up the church, if they prevail. But even if they win, the questions then are, is there a functional use for the building? And will the archdiocese give it up? For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Ambitious plans to save the historic Doylestown home where Oscar Hammerstein wrote some of his most famous Broadway musicals are in serious trouble. Last night, the township zoning board voted to deny variances so Hammerstein's grandson Will could build a theater and a museum. William Bola, the zoning board attorney, says it wasn't an easy process for either side.
Oscar Hammerstein, one of the greatest playwrights in our country, and there's a lot of passion behind that. And, of course, people who live next door and around it, there's a lot of passion behind what would happen if there were a 400-seat theater there.
And the zoning board ruled the theater would have been inappropriate in a residential zone. The younger Hammerstein says maintaining the home simply as a house museum won't work financially, but he says he's committed to trying to keep the land from being divided for new homes.
Until they put the first shovel in the ground to create that godforsaken subdivision they've got planned, you know, there's a chance.
Will Hammerstein says he won't know whether he has grounds for an appeal until he receives the legal written ruling from Bola July 2nd. Partly sunny skies, 88 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:18. This evening's forecast, clearing skies, low overnight around 72 degrees. Tomorrow, plenty of sunshine, low humidity, high in the mid-80s. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. It's Bloomsday. June 16th, 1904 is the date on which James Joyce's entire epic Ulysses is based. The book follows the main character, Leopold Bloom, over the course of one day in Dublin. In 1989, British musician Kate Bush wrote the song entitled The Sensual World, based on the soliloquy by Bloom's wife Molly at the end of Ulysses. In 2011, Bush reworked it after gaining permission from Joyce's estate to quote the book directly and released it as Flower of the Mountain. Let's celebrate Bloom's Day and listen. Kate Bush with Flower of the Mountain featuring Davy Spillan on Illin Pipes. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers Camden MBA degree allows for specializations in critical areas such as finance, international business, marketing, entrepreneurship. Evening and Saturday classes are held at the Rutgers Camden campus and Camden County College. An information session is on Thursday, July 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the Rutgers Camden campus. Learn more at mba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-6452. The Rutgers School of Business, Camden. Expect more. Be more.
I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman for the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. With the opening of our new seven-story Robert and Penny Fox Tower, Wistar Science is able to accelerate its efforts to create new cancer therapies. Our discoveries can help understand why cancer spread and are the basis for new Wistar drugs that target and attack the cause of advanced prostate cancer. Learn more about Wistar Science at wistar.org. Wistar Science saves lives.
Guided by Quaker values, Folkways at Gwynedd, a continuing care retirement community for active adults 65 and over since 1967, supports WHYY. Folkways provides residents with proven financial stability, a comprehensive health care program, and a community where friendship, caring, dignity, and respect are a way of life. One- and two-bedroom apartments, highlighting their newest design features, are now available. To experience life at Folkways and to arrange for a personal tour, call 267-464-5038. 267-464-5038.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. What's your story? Juniors at Kensington's High School for the Creative and Performing Arts have spent months exploring the concept of identity through essays, poems, and photographs. WHYY's Laura Benshoff produced this audio postcard of their work, which pushes back against negative stereotypes.
Bianca Michelle Ventura. I live around here in North Philly in Kensington. The stereotype I'm trying to break out of is a young teenage mother being successful. I want to prove that I could be someone in life. I want to be in the FBI. I want to be a federal agent. It's called Teen Motherhood. In the summer, and I was walking into a corner store, the lady was taking my order and asked, how far along was I? I was 4 months, and she said, wow, that's too young to be a mother. I told her loud and clear, this baby is actually my motivation to never quit and try harder.
Helena, DC. I tried to write about different things that made me who I am today. I wrote, I was raised by, welcome to our new home. I get comfortable sorry, but we are moving again kind of lifestyle. It represented the fact that I always moved a lot when I was younger. I made a list. I went to 12 different schools so far, and I'm only in 11th grade. For the next answer, I wrote, I was raised hearing, you know I'll always love you, but did she love the drugs more? Well, she's clean now, kind of mom. Honestly, I think it was a little harder to try to put it in words that everybody could understand, but not too plain, like, she did drugs. She did care, but the drugs kind of, like, took over her a little bit. I am very proud of myself to have written this, and my mom, I gave this to her as a Mother's Day gift.
My name is Zachary Kaufman. I take all the regular classes, Algebra 2, English. But yeah, I take theater. Philadelphia Freedom. That's my thing. Raised by Zach. I was raised with that music. That good old classic rock. The Beatles, Who. Waking up on those Sundays with the intense feeling in the atmosphere. It's game day at my house. Seeing everybody wear green, chanting E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles. Mr. McGeehan, my English teacher, he made us really think about ourselves, and he made us think, well, how do people identify you, and what do they identify you with? And then he made us think, now how do you identify you, and what do you identify yourself with? Some people think, you know, I'm really opinionated. I have these outrageous opinions, and they say, well, you shouldn't say that. But I feel like they strengthen my arguments and stuff like that.
Charlie McGeehan, English teacher and math teacher. I think a lot of our students, unfortunately, like, see themselves in the way that society sees them, which is an extremely negative and an extremely one-sided perception. Part of the value of this project is for students to be able to see a complex vision of themselves.
Raised? No, I wouldn't say I was raised. More like born into this world, expected to be a grown man by the name of Jeffrey Jerome Williams Jr. Not raised, weathered, and erosion smoothed me out to make me better. Teacher's concern became my shelter, and the promise of a life that was better came to sever any pain that held me back. Yes, kids hated and called me black and on crack. Yes, racism of my own people came back to stab me in the back. And although I didn't never know if I'd ever get my life on track, I survived. Raged. No, I wouldn't say I was raged.
Those are students at Kensington High School for the Creative and Performing Arts, and you can see their work at kcapaphotos.org. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Delaware Valley University supports WHYY. With DelVal's Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology, students develop the skills, knowledge, and clinical experience needed to work in the lives of others. Graduates are prepared to apply for the Pennsylvania Licensed Professional Counselor credential. A specialization in social justice or child and adolescent counseling can help make a difference in the community. More about a Delaware Valley University Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology is online at delval.edu/grad.